You're listening to the Top Dog Social Media Podcast. Tips and tricks from the experts, featuring Melanie Dodaro.
This is Melanie Dodaro from Top Dog Social Media, and I'm going to be talking with Lynette Young today. Lynette is the CEO of Purple Stripe Productions. She's one of the first podcasters to have ever received a six-figure sponsorship, and that was in her first year. Lynette's an avid user of Google Plus, and she really believes that it's the future for business. She's also the founder and the curator of the Women of Google Plus. Lynette is one of the 50 most followed women on Google Plus and hosts a weekly broadcast on-air hangout every Monday night on Google Plus. Thanks so much for joining me today, Lynette.
Thank you so much.
So I was in awe at your amazing following on Google Plus. You're getting close to 700,000 people. So can you share with us a little bit about how you've managed to achieve that in such a short period of time?
I talk. Part of the thing for me is that Google Plus was all of the things that we've learned over the past couple of years about what people should do if they're trying to promote themselves personally or for a business or a brand, all the things that you should do, the best practices of social media. Well, you really have to walk the walk now on Google Plus. And for me, that meant continuously putting content out there that people that I was interested in connecting with would find interesting. And the more content I put out there, the more followers I'll get, the more shares I'll get. So it actually does work how we've all designed it these years. But I do concentrate a lot of my own professional effort into Google Plus because I like the platform. I like that it's media rich, that I could post videos, I can post pictures. The photographers love it in there because you could put high res pictures. So there's a lot of this that I think is like the next step or the next evolution of a social media platform that resonated with me very much. I still love all the other platforms, but they have very narrow scope use and tactics that you can do with them, but I just thought that Google Plus offered a lot more, so I've been kind of growing along with it. But the more I put out, the more followers I get, and that's sadly for some people, you know, the way that it goes, but that's what I found so far to date.
Excellent. So did you have large platforms on the other social networks before getting involved with Google Plus?
I wouldn't say large, like not Facebook so much. I mean, I'll do a lot of work for clients inside of Facebook, but, you know, those aren't my numbers. Those are their numbers. And Twitter, I have one of the first, I think the account that I have now is in the first 500,000 of accounts on Twitter. And my original account was even much earlier than that. But I use it as a social media professional or like a prosumer level because I really wasn't interested in promoting myself so much as I was interested in finding clients and working with them. So my numbers aren't astronomical anyplace else. But when Google Plus first opened up, I decided that I was going to use this platform differently. And so far I've done that. So that's probably why I'm a little heavier skewed to Google Plus than the rest of them with my numbers, so to speak, right now.
Right. Well, I think that everybody finds, you know, their favorite social network, too. And you know, when you have a social network that you really love and you enjoy, you know, using, you're obviously going to be a lot more successful with it. I mean, for me, it's actually LinkedIn. LinkedIn's my personal favorite, and I have tremendous success with LinkedIn. And, you know, I like all the other ones also, but not nearly as much as I like LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really kind of resistant towards Google Plus in the beginning because I'm like, oh, man, you know, who needs another social network? I just barely have the time with all the stuff I have already. And so I kind of adopted a wait-and-see attitude to see, you know, is this something that's going to actually stick around? And so when I realized, yeah, it is, I started getting a little bit more involved in it and spending a little bit more time at it. And so that's, you know, one of my goals for the near future is to really kind of ramp up my my use on Google Plus because I definitely, like you, see tremendous opportunity for business. And I definitely
yes.
see it as, you know, a great opportunity for businesses, especially because it's so much, you know, it's not as heavily used as, let's say, Facebook right now, but, you know, that's obviously going to change over time. So you were one of the smart ones to get involved right away, and I'm sure you're seeing the rewards from that.
Yes. The thing for me is that I realized really, really early on that on a strictly platform basis, between Facebook and Google Plus, as an independent professional or a small business, you had almost equal footing to the big companies, to the big brands in here in Google Plus than you did, say, in Facebook. Facebook, it's still very common practice and something that, honestly, I suggest myself to do ad placement within Facebook to get awareness quickly and to grow pages and awareness quickly, where everything that goes on in Google Plus is really organic. So right. You have just as much of a shot as the big guys have, because you're starting with exactly the same tool set, where in mm-hmm. Facebook, you know, you could honestly in some ways buy your way into a certain level of following or awareness on the platform, which the little guys just don't have the money to do. So that's part of the reason why I was drawn so much to Google Plus.
Right, yeah. So what did you do before social media?
I was a technologist for about 23 years total now. I started out in the technology field. I was actually a geek that literally did everything from running wires into server rooms to gutting entire buildings and restructuring all of the infrastructure and all of the technology. But around 2000, I saw the swing that things weren't going to be so inside in enterprise any longer, because that's how big companies worked. I saw the push to go outside the firewall, outside the company, and to start having content and software and the communications happen outside. And so I kind of made the switch about 2000, 2001 myself to becoming self-employed and kind of concentrating more on the things that happen on the outside of companies than what happened on the inside. So I guess I'm about halfway through my career right now, and I made the switch.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So then falling into social media was just kind of a great fit for you. It just kind of flowed naturally.
It did, because even before that, I think I started blogging in 96 or 97, because you had to be technical back then to know how to create the websites and the blogs and the software itself. You knew how to needed to know how to do that in order to actually physically make a blog. And then we didn't call blogs then. We just kind of called it online journaling. And I kind of came across the wave and wrote it in, because it was my personal and professional interest to get out there and to meet people online and to develop communications and relationships with them. And then all of a sudden it morphed into what we used to call new media. And then after 3 or 4 years of calling it new media, we're like, well, it's not new anymore. And then MySpace came out, and YouTube, that has a very strong social aspects to it. So I just kind of, this was the path that I was on, because I was using it myself. So this is the path that I stuck with for professional.
Right. Perfect. So I haven't had a chance to join one of your Hangouts yet, but I noticed, I know that you're very active with them. You're doing at least one a week. How have Google Hangouts helped your business?
Oh, I love Hangouts. That was one of the very first things that when I got into Google Plus, literally that first night, and I was, you know, pushed on every single button I can, and then all of a sudden Hangouts, I was like, 10 people video chat? This is awesome. But I also saw at the same time that a lot of people are not accustomed to having face-to-face live video conversations with others on the internet if they don't live, quote-unquote, on the net in the first place. But I loved it, and I experimented a lot with it, and I actually use it quite a bit myself for personal and professional reasons. I do one Hangout, well, actually it's going to be two public Hangouts a week now, where they're automatically broadcast on air, and I think about 300 to 500 people in Google right now have the ability to do Hangouts on air out of like 125 million, so I was pretty extremely fortunate to get that ability. But I do a lot of Hangouts that aren't public, so to speak. It's my new telephone. When I need to talk to somebody, I'll call them up on Google Plus on a Hangout, and we'll have a conversation there. You can read people's, you know, you can see if they're paying attention to you. You can kind of have a better conversation when you're actually looking at someone. And the fact is that the Hangouts allow you to do a lot of work-based processes as well, like collaborate on documents together. You can have whiteboard documents that you can open up together. You can watch videos together on YouTube. You can work on presentations or slides together in all of the Google Docs products that they have. So it has really been beneficial for me to work with clients in there. I'll have private hangouts with just myself and another client, and we'll work on documents together, or we'll have conversations or build content together where that was next to impossible before, even with products like Skype or, you know, anything like that. So I've found that Hangouts is sort of the hidden gem within Google Plus.
So how do you find that really varies from Skype? You know, I do a lot of Skype chats with clients and just with, you know, some of the contractors that I'm working with for various tasks, and we'll, you know, share screens and do various things. So how does Google Hangouts vary from that?
Well, the first thing is that it's a free product, and you can have up to 10 total. So it's like 9 plus yourself in a Hangout. And I find that to be very beneficial if I have 2 or 3 people that I need to talk with that are in physically different locations, and we can have a conversation together. I could screen share. I could do all of those other things as well. But the nice thing is that Google is going to open up developer access to a lot of these products. So there's going to start being a lot of third-party applications out there that will be able to manipulate. You know, you can run a different browser or whatever for Hangouts and have extra benefits on top of it. But the 10-person Hangout, at first I was like, well, why would I want to talk to 9 other people at the same time? But I'm finding it to very much be like when you go out at a cocktail party or a conference or something, and you tend to congregate in little circles of people and stand around in a circle and chit-chat. The conversation bounces naturally between person to person. And it's just, for me, it's a lot more productive when I can get everyone in the call that I need to at the same time, rather than writing things down and pushing it down the line to the next person, or having to loop back with yet somebody else because we didn't get the correct answer the first time. So it's been really helpful.
So what would you say to those people who, you know, maybe are working from home and like to work in their pajamas and don't want to be on video?
Well, like, here's the secret. I usually dress from the waist up, and then I got pajama bottoms or sweatpants or yoga pants on underneath. It's a big difference because all of the quirks that happen in real life conversations tend to happen just as much in a Hangout. I've noticed that some people have a tendency to get talked over. So they'll talk, and as soon as someone else interrupts, that they back down constantly, and I see that in real life. It tends to be women. I'll see some people will dominate a conversation and others will just hang back. So there's a lot of other things that go on with having a Hangout or the multi-person video chat, that the last thing you should be worried about is actually your hair and makeup, although I think it does matter because it says a lot about you as a person and a professional, not to show up in a sloppy T-shirt with holes in it and no makeup and your hair is crazy or a baseball hat kind of thing. But that's kind of the curse of the self-employed work-at-home person anyway, is that, you know, if left to our own devices, we would be in pajamas all day long. It doesn't take much to clean up. Sometimes I just have a jacket I throw up over and, you know, lip gloss, and I brush my hair back and I'm fine. So you just have to think about it a little bit more before you want to go on and participate.
Right. So what do you know about the future and the current SEO benefits of Google Plus?
Huge. It's funny. I always say, I'm like, I know enough about search engine optimization to be dangerous. But that's not necessarily true. One of the largest perks that's kind of come to light as this platform has evolved is the obvious tie-in benefits to Google, the search engine. A lot of the other dominant social media networks are kind of hidden behind the firewall or behind the walled garden and only let certain amount of data through, or will only let the search engines, primarily Google, index them all so often. Everything that goes into Google Plus that's posted publicly, because you have that option. You could post it just on the inside to the people that you know or want to connect with, or you could throw it out basically on the internet for everyone. That content is being indexed very, very, very quickly by Google themselves, because who loves Google more than Google? And I've done a lot of informal tests about putting content out there and seeing how fast we could search for it, how fast it would be indexed, how fast the Google alerts would pick it up. and content that we've put out there would normally take 2 to 3 days for Google to pick up to finally get around to indexing again, we've had picked up in less than 15 minutes on Google+. So the key for that is that if you're talking about something that your client, that your competitors are probably talking about as well too, if you do it in Google+, you're going to get found first. And a lot of times that makes a huge difference. So those are some of the huge benefits I've been seeing with it. There's also a concept called, I just dub it rel equals author, which is the relationship tag that allows you to, with a little bit of coding, very little coding, to identify content that you put on the internet as yours and tie it back to your Google Plus profile so that when people search for you, they get a very well formatted, rich text snippet information with your photograph next to it that displays inline in the search results. And that's kind of where I think they're merging search and social, is that, you know, when I'm searching for content, for finite content like a phone number or an address to something, I don't really care what my friends think or my social graph thinks. But when I'm searching for information, say I want to purchase a new car, and I can find tons of information online about the new car, but it's very static and very dry information. What I want to know is, how do you actually like to use the car? What's your opinion of it? Is it bumpy? Is it loud? I want to hear from people that I'm already connected to. So the fact is that Google Plus allows me to kind of get a little bit of the search into the social side of things as well too, and pick the brains of my friends when it comes to the things that I want to find, and not just the, you know, optimized data that somebody decided to put on a website. So it's been very helpful, and I've been seeing a lot of improvements as they've been going along. And personally, I get a lot of benefit out of it as well.
Yeah, I've heard that that's going to be one of the primary benefits of Google Plus, is really that search engine optimization benefits that come along with it. So that's exciting, really exciting.
It is, and it's not that that's another reason why I feel that this platform will help the little guys get on the same playing field as some of the bigger, more mature, and more well-funded brands.
Right, yeah. So what has been the most important part of your particular overall strategy, your social media strategy, that's led you to your success?
The thing that I have to remind myself of it daily, is to kind of stay on target. There are a lot of things that I would like to branch out into, but the fact is I spent time and effort to develop and curate a following that sees me in certain lights, to see me as generating certain type of value or content. And every once in a while, I want to veer off that. And when I do, they let me know that it's like crickets. It's not what's expected of me. Because to put it bluntly, I've trained the people that follow me or that want to follow me in the type of content I'll produce. So to not go off on a tangent and to stay true to what I showed that I would produce and showed the type of content that I would talk about is very difficult. As a brand, as a company that's selling a widget or a very specific product, it becomes easier to stay on target. But as a professional, I strive to show a lot of my personality in myself online, because I think that's very crucial for people to get to know me. I don't want to just be cut and dry and cold all the time. But then there comes that point where I have to watch that I don't cross the line and don't say too many things that may not fit the brand of what I've developed about myself online. So that's the one thing that I struggle with still right now, because I'll talk about everything online, but does it matter to the people that are listening? And sometimes
right.
That answer is no, and it means I have to hit delete before I publish.
right. Now, I noticed on your Google Plus About Me page that you were one of the first podcasters to receive a six-figure sponsorship. How did that come along?
That was a very interesting story, actually, because it was in the days when people wanted to start podcasting to, you know, quote-unquote, quit their day job. I see the same phenomenon happening now, that people will – you know, they'll want to start a blog, and they'll say, I've been blogging for 10 weeks now, 12 weeks. Like, when is somebody going to offer me money to quit my day job? part of the shows that I did back in the day were designed and targeted in a specific manner that I would be appealable to a sponsor. And as any great thing happens, they actually stumbled across me by accident because they were looking for someone that was producing audio content that hit a largely female demographic, and that happened to be who I was talking to. So it worked, because even back then, and it's still the case now, that the majority of podcasters are male. I think that it's better now, but it's still more predominantly male than it was female. So I looked really good to them, and I had actually gotten sponsorship deals because of the my sponsor's agency. The agency was Porto Novelli at the time, and they were very forward-thinking and looking at new ways of communication and new multimedia channels online, and not just, you know, kind of brochure websites. They were looking very much out of the box for things that they could expose their clients to, and they were always very forward-thinking. So they had found me, and we worked out a deal, because unfortunately, like some of the content producers, I have business, you know, chops to me, so I knew how to work that side of the deal as well, too, where I see a lot of people, they do things for a hobby or for the love of it, but when it comes to the business part of it, they kind of fall down on it because they don't know what they're supposed to do, or they undervalue themselves. So I absolutely did not undervalue myself, because I knew what my audience was worth, and I also made sure that how I did worked in my sponsorships, it wasn't disrespectful or taking advantage of my audience in any way. So I think that that helped as well.
Excellent. Wow, that's an incredible story. So tell us what Women of Google Plus is, and how did that start?
The starting story is actually really interesting. When I first got into Google Plus, it was literally the day, June, July, whenever it was, that very first day that it opened up. And I have quite a few friends out in the Valley, and you know, some are connected to Google or some are married to Google engineers. So I got an invitation and I got in there. And to me, honestly, I become a little gender blind because I'm so used to working in technology where I really was the token female that it didn't bother me. I didn't even see it anymore. And then there were threads starting up. Like within the first couple of days, I mean, there were like probably 20,000 people in the network, and how women wouldn't understand this because it's technical, and they were still throwing bug fixes and all kinds of updates and all kinds, you know, because it's a you know, beta type platform, and they're always sending fixes in it. And there was this huge thread saying, well, just women wouldn't get it because they don't understand the technology and they're afraid of it. And I went nuts. And that night I was really chewing on this idea of, why is it that women are afraid of this? And it's not that we weren't, it's just that we weren't exposed to it yet. So over a couple glasses of wine, I came up with this idea, and I figured, well, a couple people will be interested in it, and I'll go over to Facebook and I'll talk to them and try to bring them over. And then it exploded on me because I didn't realize the desperate need for the fact of women to kind of band together to help make ourselves stronger when we go through and do something. And sometimes you need a little bit of backbone strength to get in there and to push your way through all the guys that are naysaying about you, and not even about you personally, but just about the sheer fact that you're a female, to get in there. So I've met female engineers. I met a couple women, actually one woman particularly that works for the space program. I've met one of the top ranking officers in the United States Coast Guard. Like, I meet all of these brilliant women in Google Plus. So the fact is that, you know, for any of those guys in the beginning that said Google Plus is too technical and it might scare the women off, I pretty much say no. So that was my...
So is it like a little club that you've created, or what is it?
It's not so much a club, but what I wanted to do is I wanted to provide, because back when I started this, actually, it was very difficult to search in Google Plus or find any other people unless they were already connected to somebody, you know, the one degree of separation. So I wanted to put a place that women could kind of go to find each other and go and find out about other people outside of Google Plus, like, you know, not just this, these are my interests in the platform, or these are the fields that they allow me to fill out in my about page, but I wanted them to have a better place to talk about themselves. And I wanted to show that there are a lot of women in Google Plus, because when you're just looking at it from the outside, it didn't look at the time that there was hardly anyone in there or there were no conversations going. So that was my largest catalyst for that. But I also want to find information that I think would be relevant and important to women that are using social channels online, not just tech women or engineers, but anybody that's using a social channel online to help further their career, further their business, further their status, their professional status, because we communicate differently. We communicate differently online, and how we consume information is different. So I wanted to present that information in a way that kind of we as women would take to a little bit more easily.
Okay. Excellent. Now, okay, here's a question for you that I have to know. Is Steve Wozniak actually your ex? You got to give me the scoop here.
Yes, but just not the guy from Apple. That is my ex's name. It's just not that Steve Wozniak. But it was funny because I had put that in there because I still am connected to a lot of people that I used to work with when I was married previously and had that last name. And I started getting emails right around the time when Steve Jobs passed away. And I think the press was sort of looking through, and they just found me with that last name. And they're like, "Are you married to Steve Wozniak?" I go, "Yeah." And, like, it didn't even dawn on me. And they're like, "Oh, we got an interview." I was like, "Oh, wait, not that guy. Not that one, a different one." But, yeah, it's just a funny thing. Cause sometimes
oh, that's so that cute. I thought that was so funny when I read that on your profile.
I think if I was his ex-wife, I probably wouldn't need to work. I don't know. That's just my opinion. I don't really know how any of his ex-wives made out monetarily. But yeah, just not that one. That's all. So.
Okay. So what advice would you give or offer someone who's wanting to really emulate your success with podcasting?
Podcasting, I would have to say that, first of all, you have to pick something that you love and are knowledgeable about. Because if you do it because you think it's going to get ratings or get money or any of that, you're going to lose interest very quickly. I also think that podcasting is a good addition to some sort of media products that you want to put out. A lot of companies or a lot of brands do podcasts as an augment to other types of content that they put out. And some people do podcasts, and that's their only form of communication other than a light blogging or something. But as long as they do something that they feel passionate about and in some way try to struggle to differentiate yourself about. I mean, if you're going to do, I don't know, I'm sure there's tons of them. I'm kind of picking them out of the air here. If you wanted to do a science fiction podcast or something, or a cooking podcast or whatever, you have to find something that makes you visibly different than other people, because there's a lot of great content out there, and you'll get mixed in with the rest of it if you don't have a really strong selling point or a unique point of view. And I think that that's crucial. The technical aspects of a whole different story. I'm a stickler for the audio. If there's bad audio, I can't listen. So, you know, just practice a little and get up to speed on it. But the content is key here. If you can produce really great content and you listen to your listeners and you grow it and you take their feedback to heart, I think that makes for a very good show, because we have the ability to do things that television and radio and movies do not. So I think we should use that to our advantage.
Yeah, that's some really great advice. What would you say would be the number one suggestion you'd have to somebody to create, you know, a unique kind of, you know, their own personal USP? What's going to make them unique and stand out?
One thing that I always say is really kind of helpful is to go to friends that you know what you do professionally. Like, I wouldn't necessarily go to friends that I have around home that don't know what I, you know, do for a living. But ask them for the three main words of why they think you're good at what you do, and, you know, do a little bit of ego boosting back and forth. But, you know, getting somebody else's ideas on what makes you different is very helpful, because how we see ourselves is not how others see us. Sometimes we see ourselves a whole lot better than we really are, but most times we're not taking into credit all of the things that we are truly good at. and we underplay them. So I think by asking, you know, a trusted professional friend or trusted friend what their opinion of it is, you know, I think that that's a really good starting point to find your unique offering and your unique proposition value.
So what advice would you give people who are looking to just get started with Google Plus and really grow their network?
The first thing I would say was go in and don't circle anyone right off, because here's the thing. If you go in and you just put in a profile and you don't put any information in, and then you go and circle, they're not going to have any information about you back. So I say take the time, fill out your about page, pick a little bit of content, maybe just some ideas or whatever you want to post, and put it publicly, so this way the whole world gets to know who you are. And once you do that, find the three main reasons of why you want to use the platform, and then search in the upper search Google Plus bar, find other people, and then go and circle them and go and leave comments and interact with them and do all of that first before you start looking for people to circle you back, because it will happen organically very quickly. The rate that people follow and circle in this platform seems to go much quicker than any place else I've seen, even Twitter in its early days. So the idea is that what I really hope for people to do is make sure that their own view, their own profile, and their own content has some really good information in it. It doesn't have to sit there for 6 months first, but you should really seed it with some good information before going out and asking other people to connect with you or interact with you, because if you leave it, they have a blank slate. They don't know what you're about. Pages are the same way. Google Plus has pages similar to the concept of a Facebook page, and I've seen a lot of businesses literally create a page. They don't even throw a picture or a logo in there, and they go out and they spread it all around, like, circle me, circle me. And I'm like, why? You're a blank slate. What what are you? You know, take
right.
the time first to work, to clean your own house, get your own house in order, and then go out and reach out and make the relationships and follow and circle people and things like that, because that makes it a whole lot more helpful when I see somebody interacting with me, if I see that they've taken the time to kind of set the tone about their own personality online.
Do you think that it's going to be a lot harder for Google Plus pages, like the business pages, to get exposure, kind of like it is with Facebook? And with Facebook, you know, Facebook really controls their algorithms, and a lot of times, you know, the Facebook pages aren't showing up in the news feeds, and so it's really limiting the opportunities that people have with their Facebook pages. How would that be different or similar with Google Plus?
Oh, that dreaded paid edge rank. Oh, makes me crazy.
I know.
The thing with Google Plus is every single piece of content you put out there is displayed. There are a couple ways as the consumer of the content that you can throttle it down, for example. We kind of call it the Scoble effect, after Robert Scoble.
Mm-hmm.
Because he chats a lot online, and sometimes you want to stay connected, but you just need to tone them down a little bit. But by default, when you follow someone or circle someone on the platform, you will be exposed to every single piece of content that they choose to share to you, which is good. That means no filtering by Google Plus, because I want to control what I see. I don't want Google to control what I see. But the caveat with the pages is that pages as an entity cannot go out and just circle a whole bunch of people, follow a bunch of people, search. You know, I want to search and find people in Manhattan because this is where my store is and I'm going to follow everybody. This first step needs to be put forward by the user, by the person. So that cuts down on spam very much, which I like that actually. When I first saw it, I was playing devil's advocate and I was like, well, as a brand, I want to go out and circle 6,000 people. But that would allow me to push my content to them without their permission, so to speak. So the onus is on the brand now to go out there and search for people and interact with them and plus one them and comment on their content or reshare their content and show good faith and effort that they're paying attention to the people that they want to pay attention back. And that's something that hasn't happened in Facebook. Facebook is very easy to get someone to hit like on your page. But that may be the extent of the relationship, because even if you post something, you think that that's giving you, you know, this open checkbook to just write money and basically just post to them whenever you feel like it. It's not the case. But with Google Plus, as long as you've earned that follow, you can then talk with them and develop a a relationship and grow your follower count that way. So the mechanics of it are a little bit different. And I've heard a lot of pushback from people that are they got settled into Facebook and they're comfortable with it and they don't want change. They don't want to go out there and they don't want to work for followers. They would run ads in Facebook and say, like my page for a coupon. And they're like, I didn't have to think about it. I paid for it. And I don't go back, you know, kind of thing. But unfortunately for them, but fortunately for the users, Google Plus is built in such a way that the brands and the companies really have to show good effort to connect with the community before they're rewarded with follower counts.
Right. So that's a great point. And keeping in the point with businesses using Google Plus, what's your best tip for turning online social connections into real-world leads and connections for businesses?
You have to have a really well-defined funnel.
Mm-hmm.
The sales funnel before you do that, and I've seen some people design them that the end is actually a like, or the end is a friendship or a plus one. But there comes a point that you have to narrow it down and say, you know, how can we convert it? What will people be talking? You have to write that script out ahead of time. Then when people start asking certain questions or start responding to your company brand online in a specific way, reach out to them offline, you know, private message them, see if you can send them an email and turn it that way. But thinking that the relationship ends when they plus one you or they follow you, it doesn't work. That doesn't automatically mean that they're going to go the next step and buy your product or buy your service. But not having that entire process drawn out, I see as the biggest failure in a lot of companies. They don't understand that it will not automatically convert.
Yeah.
Email address.
No, I hear
email
you.
Address is king. I mean, everything revolves on email address, email list. And as long, you know, if you get people to a certain point, you can ask for their email address or offer them something that will require them to enter their email address. And then you have to pick up like you would normally if they came in off your website or they got your whatever off of your business card. So as long as the process is set up behind the scenes, it's just the front end that's different. In this case, it's Google Plus.
Exactly. They need to have a clear path to take that relationship from social media offline, whether it's, and it doesn't necessarily need to be offline. You're right, email is great. So is phone, you know, whatever way you're going to, or in-person meeting, depending on the type of business you are and if you're working within a geographical area. But take that, I always teach that, take that relationship offline as quickly as possible and bring it to the next level.
Yeah, the quicker you can narrow it so it's not a public conversation and it's a private conversation, the easier it's going to be. But, like, for example, I'm working right now with a very, very traditional company, like 100-some years old, business-to-business company. And they said, you know, how do we use social media? How do we use Google Plus? Like, they didn't really dip into Facebook too much, but this they're willing to do. And their end goal, you know, they're like, is that the goal? Is that the end? Is that when we win? Is when we get somebody to follow us? And I said, no, the win for you is when they say, can you please have a salesperson call us? And then the way that you normally do your business kicks in, the offline things, your salespeople come out, that kind of thing. But they were looking at it as the win for them to say, you know, to do the check mark that we have one more customer is when they got followed or circled, because they didn't understand that there needed to be that transition from online to offline. So I'm seeing that a lot, but I think people are getting it easier and easier now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say to all these people who are overwhelmed? And you know, there's just so many social networks out there. It seems like there's a new one popping up every day. Do you feel like it's necessary to keep up with every social site out there, or do you think that it's better just to focus on a couple?
I absolutely think it's important to focus on a couple. My industry and your industry are a little different. It's our job to know what's going on.
Yes.
But the idea is you need to go where your audience is and where your potential clients are. For example, business to business, it's very rare that even if I go through the exercises with them that they're ever going to feel drawn to Twitter, because it's just not the right platform for them. Even though I'm sure their potential customers are on Twitter, they don't want to be talked to in a professional, they don't want to be solicited over there. They're much more receptive to going into LinkedIn, and that's always been a huge success for the business-to-business companies that I've worked for. Retail is a totally different, so I work with companies to make sure that they understand the ecosystems of each platform and what would best fit them, because they don't have all day and all week or five people to dedicate to this full time. I usually try to do three main things. I teach them about having a home base of, you know, they have to own their content. Their website has to be up to par. They have to have, you know, fairly regularly updated content that's relevant. Then go out to one major platform, say a Facebook or a Twitter or Google Plus or a LinkedIn, and then pick a minor just so you can get a little bit more exposure. But there's no reason for a lot of people to, for a lot of companies to be trying to like spray and pray all over the place. It's just a waste of time, and it's going to get them frustrated, honestly.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. So are there any great Google Plus tools that help to streamline any kind of processes? You know, for example, Facebook and Twitter have tons of different apps that allow you to schedule posts and organize followers and so forth. Is there anything for Google Plus yet?
It's coming out. A lot of them are either Android or iOS, you know, iPhone, iPad applications, or they are plugins for the Chrome browser and Firefox browser as well, too. And what this allows you to do is add functionality to your browser itself for Google Plus rather than mess around with the application itself. So I've seen quite a few go out there. Obviously, the Chrome store online is the best place to find those. But I actually have one site that I absolutely love as a professional. There's two of them, I should say. One is called CircleCount.com, and that allows me to kind of get the charts for the movers and the shakers and what were popular posts that I could go through the publicly available information on Google Plus, and I could see trending topics, and I can see hot topics, and I can see who's gaining quickly on follower counts, what business pages are doing well. So I can get a feel for the types of things that people are actively talking about in Google Plus right now. The other one that I really love is called Plus Demographics, and that allows me to run a lot of statistics. I want to say like clout, but not like clout, that it allows me to run a lot of statistics on a broad scale to, say, pages or accounts that I may run in the platform so I can get consolidated analytics on it. So these are a couple places that I use daily for professional tools, but the personal tools of how to actually use the platform easier, usually they're plugins right now for the system. Google Plus seems to want to just make the core system and leave it open for the rest for developers to kind of come up with what they want to on their own rather than trying to micromanage and control everything. Just like Facebook has applications that you can build in it and now everything, so it's the same concept.
So CircleCount.com and Plus Demographics.
Mm-hmm. PlusDemographics.com, awesome. Yes.
Okay, terrific. So any final words that you'd like to share with people that are really looking to use social media and Google Plus to grow their business?
Yes, I would say go in there and see about engaging on a personal level first, because you're going to get a real good sense if you go in there first as a person rather than coming in there storming the castle as a brand. The population in Google Plus is extremely tolerant of companies and brands and that sort of thing in the platform if they work well and they behave like human beings and don't auto-dump content and that sort of thing. So if you're looking to get started, I would spend a good solid week just poking around the system as yourself, you know, as a person, see what other people are interested in, see the communities that are cropping up. There's photography, there's cooking, there's all kinds of things. There's actually a group in there for CPAs, for accountants and such. So anything you can dream of is probably in there. But by looking and watching how the people interact and what they're wanting, I think is the best way to start. But you have to use this as just one tactic in hopefully your overall strategy plan, because if you just go in here wanting to push buttons and dump content, it won't work.
Right.
You have to figure out, you know, what you want out of the system first, before you go in. So when you go in, you know what you're looking for. You know the types of people you want to connect with and that sort of thing.
Right. That's good advice. Do we have anything exciting to look forward to with you coming out with any books or anything in the future?
I have books. I have so many books. I don't know when I'm going to finish writing them all. I'm actually doing a couple e-books, and I'm working on a print book right now, actually. Can't announce anything officially till the ink is dry. But yep. Working on that, and I do quite a bit of speaking engagements as well, too. Well, I feel there are a lot. I'm not out every week or anything like that, but I'm kind of making the rounds. I've been a professional trainer for a very long time, but a couple years ago I made the jump into speaking as well, too. So that's been interesting, and I'm going to hit a lot of the major conferences that are coming around in this industry and, of course, my client's industry, so I'm all over the place for that. So that's about it.
Okay, and if people want to learn more about you, they can go to Google Plus, look for Lynette Young and Women of Google Plus, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, terrific. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I'm sure our listeners are going to learn a tremendous amount about Google Plus that they didn't know before. I know I have.
Oh, good.